my slideshow of the Holy Land, one of my favorite pictures, which those of you who have been there, and I mentioned it once on Sunday, is Mount Zion. A lot of people don't know what Mount Zion is. Mount Zion is a hill in the near the old walled city of Jerusalem, which today lies right outside the wall, but at the time of Christ was inside the wall. The wall you see today is not the one that was there when Christ walked, but it's a similar type of idea. And Mount Zion just as it's described, is kind of like one of the hills of Rome. It's an upraised area. And on top of that, they've got a place called Dormition Abbey, which is run by the Benedictines, like we have up here at Mount Angel. And in it, there is a absolutely gorgeous church above, and then below is where the action is, down in the crypt, where it's kind of a circular area with a sarcophagus inside and a beautiful carved image of a woman and all of that. And that is the tomb of Mary, one of the tombs of Mary. There are several of these in existence because nobody knows where she died or even if she died. But I always like to ask this question when I show the slideshow, and I remember doing this for some kids once, and I asked the question, who's buried in Mary's tomb? And the answer is nobody. Right, it's like that old joke, who's buried in Grant's tomb, you know? I better stick to my day job, huh? Yeah. And it gets you to think for a minute, you know, that the church has never said whether Mary died or not. I think almost certainly she did. I mean, but the fact is, when you look in the New Testament and the Old Testament, there's a surprising amount of evidence for people either not dying or of going to the next world with a body. And it's very important for Catholics to understand that this doctrine was not pulled out of thin air. It is sometimes said it's unbiblical, but you can't say that really without almost denying our faith, because it is a central tenet of Christianity that we will one day be reunited with our bodies. I have not on a few occasions asked myself why that's even necessary. You know, the angels don't have a body, but Christ took a body and was raised from the dead in a body, and we are not fully human if we don't have one. How can you enjoy a meal if you don't have a body? How can you express feelings and emotions with all the senses that we have? We are not complete without a body. When we look at the Old Testament, there are several examples of this. One of them, I should just ask you how many of you remember from previous talks, what would be one of them? Elijah. Elijah was taken up in a whirlwind. The chariot came down and got him. He didn't die. Where did he go? That's another question, since heaven wasn't opened yet. You know, I think the answer to that is there's no time in the next world. But the other one, Enoch, is the other person who did not die. And the scripture actually says Enoch did not die because God took him. Isn't that interesting? So we've got those before Christ, and probably there are others. When we get to the New Testament, we not only have Christ, whose body is in heaven, his body, but there are also others whom are nameless. And those are the ones whom we find in one of the Gospels, who after Christ died, they came out of their tombs, quote, and appeared to many. What came out of the tomb? Was it just a spirit? Do you think so? Probably not. It was their body that came out. And it didn't then turn around, close the door, and go back in afterward. So you have all of these saints whose bodies have already been reunited with their soul and are in heaven. There are probably quite a few of these that we don't know about. It would be hard to believe that Christ's mother would be one of those that was left behind. And in fact, what she has received is what we will all receive one day. And it's not that far away. There is a separation of the soul from the body at the time of death, after which we are later reunited with our bodies, either to go to heaven or someplace else. But we are definitely going to be reunited with our bodies. It will be a glorified body. It's very interesting when we look at Mary. In many of her apparitions, she appears with a different face. If you notice that, that's one of the things I find most intriguing when we look at visions and apparitions. I'm going to do one of the Theology on Tap things in September. It's the first one I've done. They're calling it something else now. They've stopped calling it Theology on Tap. But one of the things I find most interesting is that Mary seems to have a number of different appearances. And I think that that's a sign to us that the world to come is something we can just barely comprehend. We will not be like this. Our bodies will not be like this. Christ describes us as a seed that must be opened. I think that we have no idea what the world holds in the future, but today's the day when we sort of part the veil a little bit and look through it. And it's very good that Mary was assumed into heaven, but I think the bottom line for any sermon or any feast really is, what do we have left when we're doing the dishes tonight after dinner? You know, I always ask myself, what is it we take home from this feast aside from rejoicing? The first thing it does is it puts us, for just a brief moment, which every Mass ought to do, is it places us kind of in heaven for just a moment. You know, if we're receiving Christ's body and blood, if the saints and the angels are with us here, as I'm sure they are, then we have, in a sense, we have arrived at a place close to heaven, though we cannot see it with our senses. Yet it is here. It is not very far away. And another thing that this feast gives us is hope, is that no matter what our world looks like to us at times, and no matter how difficult it may be, there is another world, and we have a place in it. And our future is very great. Mary herself was the opposite of what anyone would call a success story on this earth. She received a promise from the Archangel Gabriel that was not fulfilled in this lifetime. She herself witnessed her own son's death in the most horrible way possible. She was very poor. She had no one to take care of her after her son died. These are all things that many of you have gone through or will go through. We don't often think of Mary and all the sufferings that she had. And yet, she was called most blessed among women because she had a future that was so filled with hope. God gave her to us as a gift. She did not deserve what she received any more than we do. We can rejoice with her precisely because there is no reason for jealousy. And all of what she has received, especially in the sense of the Assumption, is something that we are destined to have ourselves. So I think in this today's feast is partly a way of looking through the veil a little bit today, and also a recognition, especially when we hear this gospel, of how the world is about to be turned upside down. The poor will be rich. Those who think they have everything will end up with nothing, and it goes on and on. And so Mary appears as a prophet for our time and saying to us and appearing to us and saying, this is your future. This is the world as it really is. Rejoice with me. Rejoice with us.